Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Susie Jones. I'm sorry I couldn't hear you right away, but I hear you now.
Wonderful. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. You've been really busy. How was Chicago?
I've been really busy. Chicago was very, very busy. A lot of activities, whether we were at the convention center, the McCormick Convention Center in Chicago, or the United Center, which is where the activities were. And if you know Chicago, there was a lot of distance between McCormick's Convention Center and United Center. So I was on the bus, on the train, in an Uber, in a cab. I was all over the place for the last week. So it's nice to be home, but thank you for asking, Bruce.
You know, Chicago's one, there's certain cities that are just so big that they actually intimidate me a little bit, and I don't know how to navigate them or negotiate them. So, I mean, it's a fun place to visit, but I would not want to live there. Well, we're glad you're back safe and sound. Hey, Susie, Peg is taking a well-deserved day off today, and we thought we would do what we call an open line show, where we'd let listeners drive the show with their texts, their calls, their questions, and just a couple of things that I have in my notes while we wait for listeners to jump in. Again, if they want to call in, and Susie will repeat this for everybody, it's 651-461-9226. But Susie, a couple of things I wanted to talk about, and there's a lot of questions that I get from clients or prospects or people in my daily work activities, and sometimes people email questions in the Wealth Enhancement Group. We've kind of consolidated some of the ones that we get pretty often, and so we can kind of put those together, lump those together, and come up with some things that we know people want to hear because multiple people are asking us about it. But I also want, and so I'll hit some of those while we wait for listeners to jump in with their questions. But I also wanted to hit an event that Wealth Enhancement has coming up. We're doing, and again, we've been talking about this a lot on Your Money over the last few weeks. People get really concerned on presidential election years. There's a lot of uncertainty, We understand that. We understand that people feel trepidatious. We've said on this show many times, if you look at a history of the markets, the stock market goes up, generally speaking, over a four-year period of time. Whether there's a Republican or a Democrat in the Oval Office, it doesn't seem to make much difference. But we are so divided politically today that if your candidate doesn't win, if that crazy person from the other party wins, people become afraid that they have to move out of the country or get all their money out of the stock market, and there's just no evidence of that. But we will take a deeper dive for people. We're doing a webinar on Thursday, August 29th, for most people listening. That's this coming Thursday. And there's two different times. You can either listen in at 12 o'clock Central Time or 6 o'clock Central Time. So Thursday, August 29th, a webinar. It's entitled Investing in an Election Year. Central Time on both of these, 12 o'clock Central Time or 6 o'clock Central Time. If you're interested, you can go to yourmoneyatwealthenhancement.com. yourmoneyatwealthenhancement.com and follow the instructions, and you can listen to the webinar that way. And so if you're interested and you want more detail, they're going to go over implications of the election, historical precedents, strategies that our investment management team is using. But the big key takeaway, if you don't get a chance to participate in the webinar, the big key takeaway that I would hope people hear and understand is, don't overreact to the election, whether it's your candidate that wins or not. In the big scheme of things long term, it probably doesn't make a lot of difference to your retirement plan and your investment results. Susie, you want to throw out the information if listeners want to get involved, and then I got a couple things I can hit on while we're waiting to line up some calls and questions.
All right, 651-461-9226. That is the number that you can call in and come on the air with us, 461-9226. You can also use that line to text a question. Bruce Helmer is doing the show today, Ask Bruce Anything. So we're talking about the election that is bearing down on us, like it or not, and people getting a little skittish, a little nervous about what the election might mean to their portfolios. Maybe you've got stocks and bonds and you're worried that one candidate or another might affect the performance of those. Bruce says no, that historically, no matter who wins, it doesn't really have that extreme of an effect on the stock market or bonds. I know, Bruce, though, there are policies, though, that different administrations bring in that may or may not impact a person's life. Maybe not their investments. So there is that kind of, you said, trepidation. There is that concern, though, depending on which party you stand with.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And that's a nice segue into one of the things I wanted to chat about. Susie, thank you for that. We are non-political on this show, and we have to be non-political as financial advisors. We can't get caught up in the political maybe self-serving statements or the misleading statements from one party to another. We have to look at the hard data. And generally speaking, and this is way oversimplified, but generally speaking, one of the things, when you talk policy, people think taxes. You know, which party is going to be better for me from a tax standpoint? Mm-hmm. Oversimplified a little bit, but generally speaking, the Democratic position is they want to keep taxes low for lower income people or middle class people. They believe that the highly compensated and profitable corporations should pay a little bit more. And the Republicans, again, generally, not to oversimplify this, believe that they should cut taxes for highly compensated and corporations, because then that will trickle down. All boats will rise if they give a tax break to the job creators and the successful corporations. And if there was a definitive, absolute, positive, right or wrong answer, we probably wouldn't have two political parties, right? There's two political
right.
parties in part because there's just not consensus or agreement or proof positive which of those two philosophies is economically more effective. And then you can even look at historical performance of the economy of, who's in the Oval Office, but that can be swayed by unforeseen circumstances or circumstances beyond anyone's control of events around the world. Or are we in divided government or consistent government? In other words, is the same party in power in the House of Representatives that's in the Oval Office, that's in the Senate? Or do we have divided government with one party in the Oval Office and a different party with control of Congress? All these things are going to play into policy and what can get done and what can't get done. The economy right now, as we sit here, and we've talked about this on the show, Susie, there's a perception of a lot of people that things are bad out there. And the reality is, and again, this is non-political, the reality is in recent years, our economy has been exceptionally good, whether you measure it by GDP, gross domestic product, or the growth of the economy, whether you measure it by the stock market, which is at or near all-time highs, whether you measure it by the really low unemployment that we've had and increasing wages, which are now outpacing the inflation rate. I think the reason that a lot of people feel like things aren't good comes back to inflation. Inflation in recent years has raised its ugly head. And again, the political parties turn that into an issue. But what I would tell all our listeners is, to some degree, inflation was predictable and it was inevitable coming out of the global pandemic. There was not enough supply to meet demand. For a year or whatever that period of time was, people were hunkered down. They weren't traveling. They weren't getting on airplanes. They weren't reserving hotels. They weren't spending money. They were hunkered down. And as we came out of that, everybody wanted to spend money. Everybody wanted to go somewhere, buy something, do something. and there was not enough supply to meet demand. Again, that's a broad stroke, and it's a very complicated issue, and I'm trying to make it seem simple, and it's not. So inflation was not just a United States issue. Inflation has been a global issue. And in fact, inflation here has been a lot less or a lot better than most countries. But if you're a consumer, if you're listening to me right now and you're having a harder time at the gas pump and at the grocery store than you were 3, 4 years ago, 2 years ago, I get it. I'm not insensitive to that. And that's probably why things feel worse than they actually are. But I would ask people to consider this. Even while things at the grocery store cost more, I bet your retirement plan, if you look at your 401k statement or your retirement plan statement, is probably up over 40%, maybe even close to 50% from where it was 3 years ago. So we've had a very good stock market. You've gained in terms of your net worth, but because of inflation, it's a cash flow problem because you're not using money in your retirement plan to buy, you know, bread and milk and gas and the things that you need that have gone up so much. And again, politically or even the experts, the unbiased can say, well, inflation's better. It's down to 2 point whatever from the 9% it was a couple of years ago. But inflation is a cumulative thing, right? If inflation's down to 2 point whatever percent, that doesn't mean costs are going down. It just means they're not going up as fast as they were, but they still went up and they're still up there and they're still rising. And so people can't, 3 years ago, $100 worth of groceries or goods and services, you can't get that for $100 today. Today, the same basket of goods probably costs you over $130, and this impacts a lot of people. So we understand that inflation has been hurtful to people. But when you look macroeconomically at everything, at the stock market, at the GDP, at low unemployment, at increasing consumer wages, and yes, inflation coming down, overall, we're optimistic and we think the economy has been very good and very strong. And I know that doesn't help you in the short term be able to pay for your gas and your groceries. So that hopefully this trend of increasing wages that's increasing faster than inflation is easing some of the burden, and people, you know, are finding their day-to-day living a little bit more palatable than 6 months ago. But there's no question that inflation has been detrimental to a lot of people. But when we look objectively at the overall economy, we are optimistic. We know it's been good. We hope and think it will continue to be good. And again, it's probably not going to matter a lot in the big scheme of things who wins in November. Yes, they might have different philosophies, different goals or agendas with regard to policy. But remember, the president, whoever it is not a dictator, is not a king. Laws to get passed have to be voted on and passed by a majority in Congress, then a majority in the Senate. And then and only then do those bills get to the president's desk for signature or veto and become law. And again, a lot of the things that go on with regard to our global economy, we can't even control. We couldn't control that Russia invaded Ukraine. We can't control that Israel is in Gaza and responding to an attack on October 7th of last year. Those are things beyond anyone's control. And clearly they have an impact on not only our economy, but the global economy as well. So again, I'm not saying elections don't matter. They do. But don't freak out and don't lose sleep over it. Don't get too euphoric if your candidate wins or loses. Just pay attention to the issues.
All right, that's Bruce Helmer. He is on with us today talking about your money, as he does each and every Sunday at this time.
We've ends up not winning because the economy, ultimately, the stock market is going to do well no matter who wins. So I wanted to talk about that because I know a lot of people get confused. And again, there is misleading information all the time, but particularly in presidential election years. Susie, another question I've been getting a lot in different variations, I paraphrased it here into one question, But I get a lot of people within the last couple of weeks have said, okay, I'm getting close to retirement. I'm within a year or 2 years or even months of retirement. What are key things I should be doing? Give me kind of a bullet point or a checklist of things I should be doing. And my list would be, if you can, boost your retirement savings even more from wherever it is. And I'm going to segue here off message a little bit. Well, not, it's not off message, but it was a big news story in the last week. In fact, I did some interviews about this. I got a lot of calls from the media when this story broke. But Governor Walz, vice presidential candidate Walz, in his financials, people seemed really, really surprised that he didn't have, or he and his wife, Gwen, didn't have investments in stocks or bonds or things like that that you would normally associate with a political candidate or financial success. And there was some criticism, and the media wanted to know what I thought. And I would say if it was just a regular citizen, it wouldn't surprise me that they don't have exposure to the stock market. A lot of people out there don't have exposure to the stock market. What was a little surprising is somebody that's a candidate for vice president wouldn't have that exposure. But when you look a little deeper to what their financial situation is, they're going to get a pension from his years as a school, both of their years as a school teacher. They're going to get a good pension. He's also going to get a pension from the 12 years he served in Congress. So most Americans don't have the luxury of these guaranteed income provisions of a pension, or what we call a defined benefit plan. So that gives anyone that has pensions like that, it gives them a lot of financial security that most of us don't have. And investing in a retirement plan is not as critical. So I don't think that Tim and Gwen Walz have a bad financial situation. I think it caught a lot of people by surprise. But when you look at the strength of those pensions, it makes sense. So if you're retiring soon and you don't have a pension, which most of us don't, it becomes even more important for us to boost our retirement savings. So that's number one. Number two, we talk about consolidation. Susie and listeners, a lot of people, when they come to me for the first time, they've got multiple accounts, and there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason for why they have all these accounts. And I always use the analogy, it's like as we live, and then we're going to move, or we're going to have to clean up for a remodeling project or something, and we start to go through our stuff, and it's like, why do we still have this stuff? We don't need this anymore. And you throw away a lot of stuff. Well, in investments, you accumulate over the years, and every one of those investments may have made sense at the time you made it, but where does it fit in your big scheme, your plan now? So we integrate, we consolidate, we eliminate things we don't need anymore, put it in the best place. So consolidating investments, consolidating accounts, managing debt. If you still have inefficient debt as you're getting close to retirement, high interest, non-deductible credit card debt or debt for a vehicle or student loans, try to eliminate that if you can. But good debt, like the low interest on your mortgage, I'm not too concerned about paying that off. Then look at your expenses. Are you wasting money? Do you have cable channels that you never watch? Do you have a health club membership that you never go to? Do you buy expensive coffee every morning instead of making it at home for a fraction of the cost? Look at your expenses. And then finally, rethink your investment strategy. And we did a show on this a couple weeks ago, that as we get close to retirement, our goal or our focus probably changes from growth to preservation. So how do we invest differently to protect our money but still get growth? So that might include things like rethinking our asset allocation, having less exposure to stocks, using strategies that give us market exposure but mitigate some of our risk. And we talked on that show about ways to do that, and I'm not going to try to redo the entire show. But these are things that things you do off your checklist as you get close to retirement. So again, and I went on and on and on long enough that we're probably not going to have time to get listeners involved till the second segment. But what do you do in the years before retirement? Boost your retirement savings if you can. Consolidate accounts. Make it more efficient. Make it more easy to understand. Number three, manage debt. Try to pay off some bad debt if you've got it. Number four, cut your expenses if you can. And number five, rethink your investment strategy. Make it more focused on preservation. You still want growth. You still want a good return on investment, but you probably want to start to mitigate your risk as you get close to retirement. And I get variations of that question all the time, Susie, so I hope that helped listeners out there. You probably want to take a break soon, if my clock is right.
Yes, it is right, and I really appreciate that list of things to do, Bruce. Boost your savings, manage your debt, cut expenses, rethink your strategy. I think I missed one, but good stuff.
You're taking notes.
I am taking notes. That is what I do. I feel like I'm in school when you're on the air with me, Bruce. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break, but if you're listening, we have a number of questions to get to from our listeners at 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. You can call or text that line. You can also ask a question out here at the fair. There are people watching us as I am talking to you, Bruce, and we'll get to all that after this on Double. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. It's nice to have you with us. We are broadcasting today from the Minnesota State Fair, and we want to remind you, if you're listening, if you have a question for Bruce Helmer and the folks at Wealth Enhancement, you can call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 1-888-6-ADVICE, or always email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Once again, here is the founder and financial advisor, Bruce Helmer. Welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you, listeners, for hanging in there. We're going to let listeners drive the second half of the show and take as many questions as we can. I just wanted to quickly mention again, I mentioned it in the first half of the show. If you're interested, Wealth Enhancement is doing a live webinar on Thursday, August the 29th. There's two times available to get this webinar. It's going to be at 12 o'clock Central Standard, or 12 o'clock Central Time, or 6 p.m. Central Time, 12 or 6. You've got two options. If you want to participate in the webinar, you can visit Wealth Enhancement Group's LinkedIn or Facebook page, or you can register or email at yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. They're going to be talking, again, we've talked about it on the show, but they're going to take a deeper dive about strategies, impacts of election results, things that in our investment management team running the portfolios for clients that we might take into account in presidential election years. So, again, if regardless of what I say, you're still nervous, give a shot to that webinar, and they'll give you a lot of detail and specific information about what a presidential election year means to your retirement plan and your portfolio. All right, Susie, let's let listeners drive it the rest of the way.
All right, 651-461-9226. We have Pete on our line from Minneapolis with a question for you today. Go ahead, Pete. You're on with Bruce.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, I got a question, Pete. I'm getting close to retirement, and I'd like to find out about my Social Security income when that comes in. That I'm assuming it doesn't get taxed up to a point, and does my 401k add to the income once I withdraw my 401k during my post-career retirement income?
Hey, Pete, thanks for listening, and thanks. That's actually a great question. So Social Security, and again, we've talked about it a lot on the show, but we can never talk about it too much because it's always confusing for people when they get there. When do they take it? How do they take it? How is that that income from Social Security going to be taxed? So basically, you're correct, Pete. A certain percentage of your Social Security is not going to be subjected to federal income taxes. There's actually a calculation that the government does, and if you're a married couple filing jointly, and your overall income is less than $32,000 a year, you will not pay federal taxes on your Social Security benefit. For a single filer, I think that amount is only $25,000. But the tricky part is what counts as income. So anything that you would logically, you know is income. If you still have some sort of a job, your wages are income. Anything where you get a 1099 on a savings account or an investment, that interest income or investment income, that counts. Yes, if you take a withdrawal from any kind of a tax-deferred retirement plan, like a traditional 401k or a traditional IRA, that's all going to be included as income. But then here's the getcha that most people don't know. When they do that calculation to determine if you pay taxes on your Social Security and what it is, they also include 50% of your Social Security benefit. And I can hear people and feel people listening right now raising their hands and screaming at their radio going, what? What do you mean? I already paid into FICA all the years I was working. Now I'm going to pay taxes on my Social Security when I get it back. And to determine how much my tax is, they're going to add 50% of my benefit. Yep, that's exactly what they do. So it's almost, I don't want to say impossible, but it's very, very difficult to stay below the threshold whereby you would have no taxes on your Social Security. Almost every married couple filing jointly is going to go over $32,000. And then how much you pay in taxes is going to be a function of how much over that $32,000 you go. So you might pay on only 50% of your Social Security, or you might pay taxes on as much as 85% of your Social Security benefit. Now, I want to clarify, that's not a 50% tax bracket or an 85% tax bracket. That's on 50% or up to 85% of the benefit at whatever tax rate you're in from all your sources of income. So your Social Security tax, for example, might be 15% if you're in a 15% federal tax bracket, 15% on 85% of your benefit. Meaning that if your monthly Social Security benefit is $2,000 a month, 85% of that is $1,700, and if you're in a 15% tax bracket, 15% of $1,700 is $255 a month. That's how much you'd pay on your $2,000 benefit from Social Security. You're going to pay $255. Now that's federal tax. That impacts everybody. Most states don't have a state tax on Social Security. I think there's only 12 that still do. But this show originates in the state of Minnesota. And at this time, the state of Minnesota is still one of those states that also impose a state tax on your Social Security benefit. So, it's almost inevitable that you're going to pay taxes on it. But there might be strategies available in terms of how you take your income, when you take your income, to minimize the tax. But generally speaking, I don't think we can totally eliminate that tax. And again, it's probably something you don't try to do on your own as you head into that and try to make those decisions on Social Security. When do I take it? When do I take money from other investments? How do I plan my retirement income to maximize the efficiency, minimize the taxes? That's the type of work that we do for clients. That's probably one of the most value-added things that we do for most of our clients. And I'm not trying to turn this into a commercial. I would just tell you that doing that and doing that well by yourself is tricky, and most people probably don't maximize their efficiency without some professional help. Thanks, Pete.
So much.
All right. All right, let's go move on at 651-461-9226. A texter writes, if you have a one-time capital gain from selling property, is there a way to avoid having your Medicare cost increase?
Great question. So for listeners that don't know what the texter knows, your Medicare cost, specifically your Medicare Part B premium, is driven by your modified adjusted gross income from 2 years previous. So in other words, if you're paying Medicare Part B premiums for 2024, the size of your premium or the amount that you pay for Medicare Part B is based on your income from 2022. And what the texter is saying, What if I sold a highly appreciated asset, whether it's land or an appreciated stock or something like that? Is that going to mean that 2 years from now, my Medicare Part B premium is automatically going to go up? And by the way, and I was digging for my cheat sheet as I was talking because I don't have these numbers committed to memory. In terms of Medicare costs, if you're a married couple filing jointly and your modified adjusted gross income is less than $206,000, you pay $175 for your Medicare Part B premium. But if you go over $206,000, it jumps from $175 to $258. Then it can go to $382, $508, $633, $675. So there's a $500 difference on a monthly basis from the lowest possible Medicare Part B cost to the highest. So this makes a difference. If I had a lot of income, it's going to bump me up into paying $675 instead of $175 a month. That's a huge deal. And the good news, the answer is yes. If you have something that is a non-recurring event, that is an anomaly, you sold this property or this highly appreciated asset, and it's a one-time tax thing that's never going to happen again, you can actually write an appeal letter to the IRS or to the Social Security Administration, and they will not raise your Medicare Part B premium as long as you inform them what happened, why it happened. It's not going to happen again. So the bad news is there is a little effort required on your part to avoid that premium increase. The good news is it's definitely doable if you're proactive. And if you're actually in that situation, we've had clients in that situation before, there's things that we can coach you to do, websites to go to and so forth that I can get more specific on that I can't do now. But the short answer is yes, you're not necessarily automatically going to have to pay that higher cost 2 years from now if you sold something.
All right, 651-461-9226. That's Bruce Helmer. It's your money, and he's helping you figure out what to do with it. Another texter writes, regarding the recent data breaches, can Bruce speak to what measures that we should take to protect our financial accounts?
Another great question, and I'll take my best shot at answering it, but I'm full disclosure, I'm going to preface my answer by saying you are listening right now to maybe the dumbest technological person in the country. I am a technological nincompoop, but here's what I do know. First of all, I've had this experience, and I bet many of you have had this also. The banks, the credit card companies have gotten really good at protecting us. I frequently get notifications on a charge where they're not sure if they're going to let it go through, and they fire me off an email and say, hey, did you really make this charge? And almost all the time I did, but I appreciate them watching out for me. And on occasion, I've gotten that email saying, wait a minute, I didn't do that. And they're good at catching it. So you get protected to a certain degree from your credit card company or your bank. Many people have some sort of an app, or they buy additional protection, LifeLock or something like that, to protect your identity. And generally speaking, those programs that you pay for, and I think they're worth it. I think they're worth the cost, but they might not protect you from being breached or having your identity stolen. But they identify it quickly, and they help you take action quickly to shut it down and mitigate some of the damage. I know one of the issues that comes up with us and our clients is, what are we doing to protect them? You know, if the Pentagon can be breached, and banks can be breached, and Las Vegas casinos can be breached and held for ransom and so forth, you know, what makes us safe? And the answer is, I think technologically, our IT team does everything they possibly can to protect data, but I can't sit here, full disclosure, and promise anybody that we could never be breached or we could never be violated. I think we do everything possible that we can. I think your data is as safe with us as it is anywhere. But let's be honest, with mobs criminal organizations, foreign governments, with everybody constantly, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, out there looking to scam people, looking to steal your identity, looking to steal from you. It's a full-time job to make sure your data is safe. But again, the banks are good. Your bank is good at protecting you. You can buy an additional service. But yeah, some people are just going to be, hijacked, no matter what they do. But it's an ongoing problem, and we do everything we can. Susie?
All right, let's get a few more in, should we, before the top of the hour? Texter writes, how is the tax rate determined on withdrawals from a traditional 401k?
So, again, we're getting great questions. We have such smart listeners. This is great. So when you're retired, and again, this is one of the things we talk about a lot with our clients. When you're working, pretty much your paycheck is your paycheck, right? And we all want to earn more money. Nobody says, I want to earn less money so I pay less taxes. That makes no sense. Even if you pay more in taxes, even if you go to a higher tax bracket, your net that you get to take home if you earn more is higher than if you earn less. So while we're working, our paycheck is our paycheck. And I say there's not much we can do about it. There's some things we can do about it. Maybe your charitable contributions are deductible, but for most people, they're not. Because for the vast majority of people, I think it's over 70% now, you're just going to take the standard deduction because the standard deduction is higher than what you'll get if you itemize. You can contribute to a tax-deferred plan. So if you contribute to your traditional 401k at work, that the amount that you put into the plan is going to reduce your income by the amount of the contribution, which is going to reduce your tax liability in that year. But when we retire, we have actually more control to manipulate where our income comes from. All of our income does not have to come out of our tax-deferred plans if we have tax diversification. And again, that's something we talk about not infrequently on this show, and we definitely talk to our clients about this. So we want you to participate in your company 401k plan. There's a lot of things to like about that. Like I said, you get a deduction for the contribution the year that you make the contribution, so it lowers your taxes in that tax year. Your growth does not issue any 1099s on the gains, so it's tax deferred or tax delayed. Your employer might make a matching contribution, which is great. You don't want to leave money on the table if they'll match part of your contribution. And it's easy to participate. You don't have to do anything. They just withhold it from your paycheck. So there's a lot of things to like about your 401k, but I don't want that to be your only source of retirement savings, because now when you're going to spend your money, if the only place you have to spend it from is your tax-deferred plan, like your traditional 401k or traditional IRA, those withdrawals, to the texter's point, to the texter's question, are fully taxable, just like a paycheck. So I want you to have money in tax-advantaged vehicles as well, like a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k, where I can take withdrawals and not pay taxes on the gain. If I have taxable accounts, money that I get a 1099 on every year, if I take a withdrawal from those accounts, it probably doesn't have much impact on my tax liability, because I'm going to get a 1099 for the earnings, whether I spend those earnings or not. But what I find, to listeners and to the texter's question in the texter's point, is that the vast majority of people out there, when I see them for the first time, the vast majority of their wealth, their savings and investments are in these tax deferred plans. And it's kind of a ticking tax time bomb, because somebody's going to pay the tax on that money. You're going to pay the tax when you spend it, or if you die with it and you leave it to your kids, then they're going to pay the tax. And they have to take the full amount of those accounts and spend it down to zero within a 10-year period of time after they inherit. Now, the other question that comes up a lot, and the texter didn't ask this, but everybody's thinking it, is, well, at what tax rate? And again, if you're spending the money while you're alive, you're taxed at whatever your tax bracket is based on your cumulative income. So you probably are also receiving Social Security. That's taxable. you probably also have, or I shouldn't say probably, you might have a pension. That's taxable. You might have income from a part-time job, taxable. You take a withdrawal from your tax-deferred retirement plan, taxable. And you add all that together and you look at your adjusted gross income after you take your standard deduction, and that determines your tax bracket. So I always tell my clients, for retirement income planning, we want tax diversification. We want money in taxable accounts, tax-deferred accounts, and tax-advantaged accounts, and then we can manipulate how much we take from each one every year to minimize our lifetime taxes, maximize our reduction of taxes is one of the best ways that we can enhance your return on investment, because at the end of the day, it's not what you earn, it's what you keep. So, Texter, unfortunately, any tax-deferred plan, when you take withdrawals, they're taxed as ordinary income taxes. Susie, can we squeeze in one more short one?
Yeah, let's try to do that. This texter writes, is there such a thing as a self-directed donor-advised fund? And, like, what is that, and is that possible? And you have 2 minutes.
Okay. So first I'll tell everyone what a donor-advised fund is, a strategy where you can put money into a fund that will ultimately then be redirected to a charity or charities of your choosing. We use it for people that can't deduct their charitable contributions if they just look at the usual amount that they tie it to their church or give to their favorite charity. We might say, let's accelerate your charitable giving, and what you might give over the next 5 years, let's do it all in 1 year in a donor-advised fund. Then you get a deduction for your generosity. So we use donor-advised funds not infrequently. A self-directed donor-advised fund, I've never heard that term before. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It doesn't mean it's not possible. At this moment here on live radio, I'm not familiar with that concept. It would not surprise me if it does exist. I know there's certain custodians or financial firms that we go to when we set up a donor advised fund, but it can be a very good strategy in the right circumstances, but I'm not familiar off the top of my head with anything called a self-directed donor advised fund, but I'm impressed that the texter even knows about donor advised funds, and it can be a good strategy. All right, Susie, I know we're out of time. That went really fast.
Yeah, but let's remind people again, August 29th, noon and 6 p.m., a webinar, and they can find out more. Where, Bruce?
They can go to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com or Wealth Enhancement Group's LinkedIn or Facebook page.
Wonderful. Make it a great week, Bruce. Good to talk to you. 1-888-6-ADVICE. If you have a question and it didn't get answered, call them now.